This is a production of Cornell University.
Hi, everybody. Happy Wednesday, February 4th. We're going to go ahead and get started. We do have a full agenda today. Mary is coming right from another meeting, so there was some flux in when she may arrive. So as she arrives, we'll make time for her. And then we do have the Provost Search Committee. I did send out the document that now I can't find myself, but it's somewhere, with the Provost Search Committee updates and what they're looking for. So please, hopefully everybody had a chance to read through that and use that as a reference. But that is available. If not, you can probably pull it up online on your tablet, laptop, or smartphone. We want to go ahead and call for any late additions to the agenda.
Curtis.
Budget. Budget. Okay.
That's incorrect.
Okay. Any other late additions to the agenda? Nope. Okay. Seeing none. Approval of the meeting minutes from the January 21st meeting. Any changes, additions, subtractions, deletions?
Do you have extra copies of that stuff, I think?
Amy, it seems like we're short on copies.
Do you want to look at it
today?
Yeah, and I couldn't find it in my email. So.
Okay. Okay. If anybody have any additions or changes? No? All right. Is there a motion to approve? Is there a second? Any dissent? All right. Seeing none, it carries unanimously. We need so many people to change our charter. I believe the number is 13, which is 2/3 of seated members. And we right now have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So we'll just sit with that till we have enough people to make a change. I guess I'll introduce it quickly just so we can say we've gone through it. It essentially is a resolution for election calendar charter change. BJ's going to bring it up on the screen, but I printed 20 copies, so everybody should have a copy. It basically is two changes to the filling regular vacancies section, which the first change is the bullet says the assembly reviews and approves election rules, procedures, and a publicity plan for elections in the semester prior to the election. I don't remember in the last few semesters us ever doing that or adhering to that. So to bring us into compliance and past practice, the suggestion is being made that within the first three meetings of the semester in which the elections will be held, which is essentially what we've been doing over the last 3 weeks. So that sort of falls in line with our past practice. And then the second section is bullet 5. Elections must be completed and results tabulated no later than the last day of March. The proposed change is elections must be completed and results tabulated no later than the last regularly scheduled employee assembly meeting in May. So it gives us 2 more months. It doesn't give a firm date or hard deadline. It just says by your last meeting in May, you need to have the elections done. I can't chair the meeting, so BJ would be the chair for this discussion, so I'm introducing it.
Are there any comments or discussion based on these proposed changes? If you look up on here on the screen or on your sheet, it is sections 1 and 5 are the bolded sections that are
I just wanted to know if you could read my not changing things last meeting in June.
Oh, okay.
Can I take it?
Was there any thought more about the three part four and the sense of these so many people to the university?
There wasn't any for this. I guess I would speak to Greg.
So the UA hasn't changed their process.
Okay.
So we don't have Mary, that's up here. Yeah. Correct. So we can introduce another charter change to change that as well if we want. I just wanted to make sure that the UA was falling into place with their changes as well. So. We don't have the quorum to vote.
Do we know?
Hazel's here.
We're one short. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. No, I. Sorry. One, three, six, nine, 12. We have 12. We need one more.
Sorry.
It's okay. So we'll wait. Curtis, you want to give a quick budget update while Mary has a chance to get settled in? You can.
So, first, I apologize. The spreadsheet I posted was incorrect. I mean, it was mostly correct in terms of the expenses, but for the 2014-15 budget allocation, those were incorrect. I actually made the corrections and I didn't record them because we didn't have that. So currently our balance is we have $2,443.18 left in our account. And this is including we had about $2,478.59 rollover to this account last year, and we used the majority of that money to buy the sticky notes, the post-it notes, with the EA logo on it, just to let you know. We're still running really high with administrative costs, and administrative costs is not just food costs, but a lot of stuff to run the EA, and we're just trying to figure out how to calculate that and how to get more managed of that. But at the end of this cycle, one of the things that was asked was, would we have money remaining? We're expecting that if we stay where we're currently spending money and like a little bit less on the election, we'll have about $1,000 left over. So there is enough money if we want to do bring some type of a drug to the staff. And we do have $1,300 reserved for the kudos money. But the question we have with the kudos money is if we want to do the same thing or something different. In order to get. So we can talk about that. But I did make sure we allocated money. Also, we worked on the budget for next year a little bit, and we're requesting a budget increase because we're not going to have the rollover money that we had last year, so we're asking for $12,500 with my hope that we get at least $11,500.
Curtis, I have a question on that. See that some of the committees that allocation is like $100 or something like that. Do those get rolled over year to year?
No, and those were not correct numbers.
Okay.
So I'm going to refocus. So each committee got actually not $100. We hit about $50 in it for this year. If you sent the email, and some of them will be cost out of zero because in the previous years they spent nothing. So we're just assuming based upon what we heard from the committee that they go in and spend nothing. Then that's how we got that $1,000.
Well, I was going to bring up that the committee meeting or the education committee meeting that's going to be like next week or something. How they
wanted
to use that money if they had any ideas for that, so should I not bring that up at all?
No, if they want to use it, but education actually only has $50
okay.
From this year's budget. Okay.
Tell them to have a ball with their $50.
But honestly, I would say for this, if they do have ideas, they'll come up with ideas, and I mean, like, and we can see. I mean, the most I can do, I have no problem asking for more money, and if it's something.
So in the interest of time and trying to optimize our time with Mary, Curtis, do you just, in closing, date when our final budget needs to be discussed here and then submitted to the office?
I don't know.
Okay, great. Because I think that we should just have a proposal, look at it, we can all discuss it, vote on it, and then do that. Yeah.
And I would post that one too, because he didn't vote. So
we're going to shift gears now. We have Mary with us until about 1 o'clock today, or you, of course, you're always welcome to stay for longer if you'd like.
There's only so many administrators you should have in the room.
Yeah. Continuity of leadership, we're going to ask you to leave. So I guess, well, we don't really have any talking points. I know a few folks have some questions that maybe they wanted to ask, just general discussion. This is definitely sort of a less formal time than we've had when President Horton has come and things like that, just our opportunity to interact with Mary and get out some topics and some ideas. To sort of tee things off, one of the things that, and I don't know if we reported back on this last meeting, I can't get my calendar dates and stuff, was the idea of, we had asked in our last meeting to present to Mary maybe the idea of a staff address in the spring from Mary. And one of the ideas that came out of our meeting there was this idea of a senior leadership panel discussion that Mary would sort of moderate and host with the employee assembly to get, you know, the provost and other senior administrators to the table. So that's sort of the idea that we're working on and doing that sometime in May. But I think that that's sort of a good solution to I think what our sort of what our desire was to have more time with senior leadership and the staff, just as an update.
Wouldn't that also be a good time for the award presentation?
Absolutely, absolutely. To tie in the different awards that we have and that recognition at that time. Great idea. So I think we mentioned it maybe.
And Gina and I talked about it. The only thing we wanted to see what type of questions we were getting from employees. So that might not be appropriate time, right? But if the staff's all angry, you know, or frustrated.
You could do something like, and now for a totally different, on a totally different note, you might want to do the awards first.
Mm-hmm. Or see what the questions are, because it's people coming there because they're. I agree with
that.
I think mostly people do come because they have to. When you make it actually open,
yeah,
that's why you have it.
So one of the thoughts we were going to propose is that we would do a call for questions to the staff community in advance so that we had some idea of topics and sort of formulate the panel based on those topics and then work with you know, Mary and the rest of us to formulate and consolidate and have good, clear questions that can sort of feed a wide audience needs, as opposed to them being, you know, in my department, this specific event happened, and here's, you know, to try to broaden it so that we get more feedback and engagement there. So we'll continue to work on that and develop and hopefully get a little subcommittee or working group together to formalize those plans and be back in contact.
Okay.
BJ, I know you had some questions on your list.
I do, but are there other
questions? Before BJ jumps in.
That makes me nervous now. You don't even want to ask it.
So my first question, looking over the HR website, I see there's the fiscal year.
Hey, you're the one that looked at it.
I also looked at the strategic plan and the annual report.
Oh, wow, I'm impressed.
They're very well put together.
Thank you very much.
My questions are, looking at the original strategic plan from HR from July 2013, mm-hmm. looking at the new plan for 2015, what has shifted and kind of what's led to some of the changes in priorities?
Well, I can't actually remember exactly what shifted. So did you have a specific question? Because I'll tell you what we tried to focus on in 2015 is that we were an overworked, overwhelmed department, and we needed to reduce the number of things we were trying to get accomplished. Everything that we had on the 2013, that's actually not a time-bound plan. That's sort of a visionary statement of what we think needs to happen in higher ed, HR, or Cornell. And then 2015, what we really tried to do is say, you know, maybe we should just try to pick a number of things we can actually get accomplished rather than so many things that we make incremental improvement on everything but don't actually get anything done, which is very demoralizing for people that are working there.
I don't know if everyone has got a chance. Could you, I guess that was kind of my next question too, is looking at the plan for 2013, how did you come up with some of these goals?
Mm-hmm.
And
can I see it? So what we were trying to do is we did an external scan. What's the best organizational practices and what role does HR play in those? So the first thing that we did was an external scan of the environment. We all, you know, go to conferences and read stuff, and then it's basically just a plan. We looked at our internal pressures and then what we think the general opportunities are, and then the FY15 goals fit underneath here. So there's these are, none of these will surprise you. So the first one was to align, create alignment, so that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. A constant pressure here at Cornell, right? Because we very much identify at a local level, but does it all build up into something bigger? And So the first one is all about what does alignment mean? What does it mean in HR? What does it mean to top talent? What does it mean in terms of succession and changing? The next one is really about the fact that diversity needs to become part of what we do, not a standalone set of activities, but really integrated into the way that HR approaches not just recruitment, but everything that we do. And so that was actually kind of a mind shift, frankly, for us, that, you know, instead of looking at it as a standalone priority or tactic, integrating it as a part of our overall priorities. And then what does that actually mean in terms of the way we approach our policies, our programs, our strategies? The third was to place more of an emphasis on supporting top leadership. And this is an acknowledgement of the fact that how your lives are affected really has much less to do with a program of HR and much more to do with the way the top leadership of the organization approaches things. And so giving more support to top leaders so that they develop effective, realistic people strategies. And it's also about succession planning. There's a lot of change already. There'll be more change coming. Does the leadership have a planned way in terms of going through all of that? Some of these are very wonkish, I realize, as I read these. But going along with that is making HR a partner, a business partner in deciding things. And so really having the HR people resident at the colleges and units know the work that's happening and support the decisions of the colleges and units with so not just how do you solve a problem, but how do you avoid a problem? How do you make things better? And then more of an emphasis on recognizing top performance. So we spend a lot of our time dealing with unfortunate incidents that occur and disappointments that we have, but we don't necessarily put as much emphasis on really rewarding top talent. And that, in a time of constrained environment, you don't have the money to do something obvious. What else are you going to be able to do so top talent knows that you think of them as top talent? Bolstering organizational effectiveness, and this is something that we continue to struggle with as we try to figure out how to align the work that we have with the resources we have available. How do we do that in the optimally effective way? And I'm just going to kind of skip some of these that really are. Then there's some that are just about us being better with data metrics so that people decisions are based on metrics. And finally, really taking a hard look at the bureaucracy within our own division, policies that are just, I can't even remember them, and nobody knows what they say, and do you even need them anymore? So Alan and his colleagues, I think, have developed a list of 7, I think, policies that just, we think can just go away. They're really just noise in the system. So what else can we do in terms of procedures, policies, programs to reduce the bureaucracy of human resources, which affects everybody. It takes time out of everybody's work. So those were the
7.
Hmm?
You said 7 things.
I think there were 7 that.
Yeah, I think there are things that, for example, there was a statement about what our office does. Not that our office is going away, but it didn't need to be.
Well, there is a new president.
Well, so far as I know, there are kind of insurance statements, more like declarations than true policies. So some of those were migrated into places that people could find them on an HR sort of website rather than cluttering the noise with policies. Policy and more are under review. More are under review. We just started there.
Since you brought up the P word, the president.
I thought you meant policy.
No.
Sure, go ahead, Kurt.
Just in terms of the policy review that's going on, how is the, because I know part of our charge is to review HR policies and stuff, so how is the engagement and involved in that conversation?
So the EA is always involved in the addition of a policy, but in everything we've taken out, they're not policies. They're actually procedures that were put in policy format.
Yeah.
So all of the information still exists. It's just been moved to the appropriate place. And so what we've done is actually work with the people who are affected by that. So if you're on the EA and you're actually doing that work, you may very well have been involved, but we don't write a new policy without going through the policy committee. And then there's also another role, I think, for the UA, is the way it's written. And there will, I think, if we can streamline to what's actually a policy, I think we will find some gaps. So I think it's fair to say right now we're looking at whether or not we need an anti-bullying policy. So that would go to the EA policy.
I just interject from the UA. There is any changes to the policies, the actual university policies. There is a UA representative on that committee, especially because within the overview of that is that it has to at least be given the opportunity to be reviewed by the UA.
We'll give you a list of these things, but they're pretty unremarkable. And there's nothing particularly controversial. As a matter of fact, you go, who wrote that? And my biggest fear is I'm going to look at it, say that, and go, oh, I wrote that. So they're just procedures that need to go into the procedures place. And then the next step is to say, do we need that procedure? You know, is there a better way to do that? You know, do six people have to look at that thing that we just, so that's the next step. We're not there yet.
Bridget, did you have something?
I just wanted to ask, I've heard a lot of staff saying that they're very fearful and concerned that they're hearing thoughts or rumors, I don't know what it is, about more staff layoffs and higher increases. And a lot of people are very concerned and very worried.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So I can't promise that there's not. We always have layoffs. I mean, they happen all the time. But in terms of a whole scale set of layoffs, we are still in a deficit. The budget is getting cut. Every college and unit is looking at ways in which they can make that cut. What we're asking everybody to do is to develop a staffing, if it affects people, faculty or staff, if it affects people, a staffing plan that they have to then review it, I have to review it, so that I have a sense that the work can continue to get done. Whether they're going to use an open position or whether they're going to eliminate a role with an incumbent in it, I think most people are just trying to eliminate open positions. The problem with that is that if the work isn't figured out, that actually sometimes feels worse because you're being asked to do even another job. And so we have not decided to do a hiring freeze. Until I see the staffing plans, it's hard to know whether we should be doing that. But we did ask every college and unit to put a position review process in place. So before a position gets posted, they look to see whether or not there's a different way that they can get the work done that would retain the existing staff and maybe change their jobs, and if so, can we give them the training that's necessary? So it's an understandable concern because we, you know, we just kind of keep talking about this, but this, I feel like the requirement to develop a staffing plan is kind of slowing the reaction down to saying, let's make sure we know how this work is getting done, and if we were to not fill that job, for example, you know, is that just asking everybody to do another fourth, or can we actually take work away? And for the most part, that's been the focus. But more to come. I mean, we're just we're really early as compared to the last few years in terms of understanding the budget. So the colleges have just begun to try to think about this. Yeah. Well, you know, it's a little disappointing, you know, after all these years to still be talking about having a budget deficit, and I think the general sense is we just have to get rid of it. Because every year that a deficit drops to the bottom line, that deficit gets added to an accumulating deficit that eventually has got to get paid back, and it's getting really significant. So you don't stop accumulating deficit until you stop creating one at the end of each year. You know, it's no different than what we do, right? If you spend more than you have, then you put it on a credit card or you take out a loan, and you keep doing that, pretty soon you got to pay that back. So the goal is really to finally, once and for all, close that budget gap, which has, we've known that it was there for since 2008. In reality, it was there for a long time. We had one-time money we were using to pay it at the end of the year. That money was coming out of the fact that the endowment was overperforming. And then 2008 happened, and the source of funds to cover the deficit went away. And that's what we've been struggling with ever since. So we've been, our eyes have been bigger than our stomach, probably for the whole time I've worked here. I just don't think we were quite as aware of it before.
With continued talks of deficit and things like that, has the SIP pool or any of that been finalized or made public?
No, it hasn't been made public. It was a hard decision, to be honest with you, because anything you put into an increase adds to the deficit. So the question is, do you have a bigger cut or do you not? And so we sort of came down. I'm fairly confident saying there'll be a very modest shipping. There's not, you know, I think there was a general consensus of the leadership that while it was going to create more immediate issues, that you have, sooner or later, you have to adjust yourself to your ongoing costs, right? So that's actually just delaying that reality, right? Because you can't keep everybody at the same pay. That's not reasonable. So it's modest, but it's something. And the inflation rate, you know, is continuing to work in our favor because it keeps going down.
Other questions?
What's that?
I said the cost of living does not go down.
Well, it actually is going down. That because of the cost of energy plummeting, the 12-year rolling average, which when I started tracking it for this year was at 2.3, is now under 2.
My utilities went up in my credit.
I know. You're singing to the choir. I'm just saying that those would have happened and your energy bill would have gone up. So with the cost of living is a composite of all of those things. So having that one factor which you can't rely on, right? That's going to bottom out and it'll eventually come back up. For right now, it's a helpful thing. But you're right. I mean, the other bills continue to raise. It will have a positive impact on the increases in the cost of food because food moves over transit, and so we're getting a little relief.
Your career that I've been on series, one of the January 23rd.
career development that was canceled. Any idea why that was canceled? I'm getting a lot of people that have asked me.
I don't, you know, I don't.
It was very vague. It was just like, it's been canceled for a future date. And with just the changes that are going on, with Chris leaving and everything else going on, upper administration people are just concerned and worried. And,
wow, really? For yeah. The best?
There is a lot of concern that I am hearing.
Yeah.
A lot of concern from people.
Yeah.
When I was asked to pull it, it was because only one person had signed up.
I was going to say, I think it was about, I was afraid to say that, but my understanding was it was about sign up. These programs are very appealing and very hard for people to make time to get to, and that's the reality of most people's jobs these days. Not they don't want to go, it's that they can't find the time to go.
So I
no, that's okay. I thought the same thing, Nancy, but I was like...
In other words, it's very innocuous on that level, except for, you know, the reason is, as Mary said, to try to bring the money to get away.
I think we were, I'm always afraid of saying something like that about a employee-directed program, because in an environment where funds are very constrained, it could be misunderstood as a lack of interest, and therefore a lack of value, and therefore a difficult thing to replicate later. So the vagueness is because of my sensitivity about, you know, sometimes they aren't the right program, but I know from all of the feedback I get, a program focused on career development is not attended out of lack of interest. So I was just afraid of the message it would send if it sounded like nobody here cared to go to something about career development. I don't believe that I don't believe it's because people aren't interested in career things.
Yes, I'm probably part of that trend. I see something on the sign-up part because I figure I'll just go. But that's just a message to everyone, is that we need to encourage people. If you want to go to it, put your name in and sign up for it.
Yeah.
There is an interest out there, we need to show them.
Curtis?
Are you eating all the fruit? Because I didn't get mine yet.
Oh, there's a lot more. But I do like fruit. Is there conversations among the administration still about lead time for wellness? And is there a way that we can bring that conversation back to the president? Mm-hmm. I know that president's important. They say no, but they said they're committed on finding.
So if I recall, they were sent back, but that committee was sent back, and I have not gotten an interim report from the committee. If you remember, they said, we're not going to do it the way you suggested, and I believe the committee was sent back to do some benchmarking and develop an alternative approach. I don't believe that's been finished, but I can check with Beth McKinney. But the answer, well, so exactly. So, you know, at the same time that we're writing that it's very important to stay flexible and everything, we had a major college essentially eliminated. So, you know. So I think the answer to the question is you can always bring something back. I would at least talk to the committee before the EA addresses it, but you could send it to your policy committee. I think that the problem was it was a very hopeful recommendation. It was a lot of time off at a time. You have to think about the way to send these messages, right? So we tend to send kind of mixed messages. People are so busy they can't breathe. We want you to pay 3 hours a week of relief time so that they can go to wellness. Where there's ways to basically say those same things but not say them so that they look like they're conflicting with one another. Wellness opportunities are a way you can prove that certain ways of approaching wellness improve productivity, reduce absenteeism, and then how are places that we would identify as best practice places, how are they doing that? And so I think that we may not have the right language yet to have it heard that way.
Okay.
So I would say if it is continues to be a priority to staff, it's your obligation to continue to bring it up. You know, and there'll be a new president. Try again.
So in response to that, too, I saw from the annual report, it talked about flexible work plans and people innovating within the campus store. So that seems like an area of success where they've been able to figure out how to serve the departmental needs and also serve wellness needs. When you find successes like that, what are ways that Central HR is kind of distributing these good practices?
Could we highlight those better? I think we can talk to both Nancy and to Jennifer about ways to highlight them. I will tell you honestly that this is a difficult transition right now. And, you know, no one wants to be seen as appearing to have too much or maybe not appearing to be lean and mean or whatever. So for those of us who have developed ways in which people can work in the way they need to work, it's not necessarily the case that this is the environment where you would want that promoted. I'm being completely honest. I think our division does a lot of flex time and flex arrangements and work at home, and I believe we get our work done as well or better as we would if we were all coming in from 8 to 4:30 and a third of the people were stressing about whatever they can't get done. I believe that. Not everybody believes it. There are still people who identify productivity with face time. If I can't see you, how do I know you're really doing the work? So if you're here before I come in or you're here after I leave or you're doing your work from home, you know, how do I know you're actually doing any work? We, as you can see, we work from goals. So each goal, we have plan that we put out. It's a PIP or SIP or I can't remember what it's called now. But anyway, it's a strategic initiation plan, and you write down how you're going to get there and what the milestones are and whether you met them, and you use a little red, green, yellow thing, and people know what they have to do, and it's reported back to me every month, and I take it to the president every month. And so I don't care if you're sitting on the roof and get it done. Well, actually, the EHS has to say about that. But, you know what I'm trying to say. But not all work is defined that way. And I think we have to find a way, and hopefully, when we get through this difficult financial circumstance, we can find a way to celebrate that. Because there's a lot of places that do things.
Do you feel that the difficult financial time will really ever go away, or is this just sort of the new normal?
Yeah, so that's a really important question. I don't think we ever had as much as we were spending for most of the time I was here. I can tell you about 5-6 years in, I kept thinking, man, we didn't spend like this at Harvard, and I think they have more money. So I do think constrained times are probably certainly the rest of the time I work, but I'm old, probably for the rest of the time that you work. There's a difference, though, between being in constrained circumstances where you focus your money and being in a deficit. Because once you're balanced, right, then it is about staying, living within your means. And when you're out of balance, you got to get in balance first. So I think that I do think we're seeing the end of that. I think the deficit will be taken care of after this year. I don't think we're going to be in a place where, you know, there's a store of money that we can all go push the money from the money plan. I don't think that's going to happen.
Do you maybe want to touch on this sort of the senior leadership transitions, new folks coming in, folks going out.
Now we have one of each.
Yeah.
So Beth is here, David's here. I had one meeting with one, I had the other meeting with the other. There's not the president per square inch right now. So, there are a number of people who are leaving. And it is not unplanned. So a number of people committed to stay through the president's term. And so this is expected. It doesn't mean it's any less jarring. We're a fairly constant organization. We don't have a lot of turnover and a lot of change. So if you were to normalize the turnover, so it's going to feel, I think, like a whole lot all at once, If you were to normalize it to the kind of leadership turnover you see in other organizations, it's about right. It's just it's all happening at the end of his term. And I suspect there'll be more. And what we've been working on is trying to develop the talent under the leaders so that we're not always going out to the outside bringing in. Because there's, it's in, you actually need to uncap the organization for real career development to happen. So, you know, I'll use our organization. We had two senior leaders leave. We did not fill either job. Now, these are people that would be very hard to replace anyway, but we have a lot of people who have been hanging with us for a long time, waiting for new opportunities. So, you know, once we understand what our budget possibilities are, we decided this is time to let those people grow, give them the training they need, and, you know, have faith in them that they can move up. And so, although it's jarring, it's also where the opportunities lie. And I think, and it's also where the new ideas come.
So, with new people coming in, inevitably they bring a lot of energy, and the people around them also have a lot of energy because they have new people they're reporting to, and yet we still have the constraints from the budget on staff numbers. How do staff who are currently here kind of juggle
right.
the work that they feel against the energy and pressure
followed by the inauguration.
Then graduation will happen again.
So basically, how is HR viewing those shifting things, and how should employees.
Well, what you've raised is very real, right? It's and you can provide tools to people for how they're going to deal with that. But ultimately, there's two ways you do it. You have to align the work, so which means you have to work on some kind of a plan. So if you know that there's going to be a lot of new ideas coming, then you have to make room in your resources for those new ideas, and they can't just layer over top. But when they do, and they will, we have to give employees the skill set to say, you have to pick. I can do this, or I can do that, but I can't do both. And also the comfort to say, and I prefer, actually, to do that. So don't give the, because what often happens to people in that position is the good stuff's the new stuff. And when they say, I can't take, they don't get the new stuff. And they end up with the stuff they already had, which if they had had their choice, they'd have jettisoned the stuff below. And so I think what we need to keep trying to do is streamline the work that people find the least value in, identified by them, so that we have room for that new stuff. And that kind of a dynamic organization requires both work at the leadership level and also skills and comfort at the work level when we're doing the work to say, I can't do them both. I prefer to do this. And here are my ideas about what we could do with what I was doing. And so we got to kind of come at it in both ways.
Thanks, Chief.
Right,
you sure? Okay. Any final questions for Mary before we change gears? Any final thoughts, Mary, from
no,
yourself?
But I'm really looking forward to this.
It's like a Sunday afternoon news show here we got.
We can grill them. Go ahead. You go first.
You write the questions. I'll ask them.
Okay. From an anonymous source.
Close to the administration.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, again, I think on behalf of all of us, Mary, too, we appreciate all that you do and continue to do to advocate for our best interests through what are considered by many to be sort of uncertain new times. So we appreciate
that.
And I think I speak for everybody in saying that. So
thank you.
Thank you for doing what you do. Welcome to all of you. What I'll probably do is turn it over to you to provide introductions of each one of yourselves, and then
I could introduce him. You want me to?
Go ahead, Mary.
No, I'm not.
No, we'll turn it over to these folks, and then We've got about 25 minutes or so for presentation and discussion. We do have one other item on our agenda that we need to get to before we conclude. And I'll sort of help keep track of time and moderate from there. So I'll turn it over to you.
Great. My name is Matthew. I am Vice Chair of the
John Pocan, I'm Senior Vice Provost. I work directly with the facility.
I'm Stefano. I'm the CFO and the Chief Administrator on the
Facility. I'm Todd Heinberg. I'm just the interim dean of the community.
And I'm currently the dean of the college. So we're really here to listen to this, but I thought I'd bring this. So we have come up with the search committee together, came up with a search statement that helps define for everyone what the provost is and the responsibilities are. And while the provost is the chief academic officer, so it's a great concern to the faculty for the provost. And certainly I have a great incentive to hire a great provost if they'll be my boss. There is a huge impact on the entire community. The provost sets the really great influence into budget allocations that go to all of the administrative vice presidents, and so therefore really affects the whole campus, not just the academic faculty. So this really is a high impact service that is going to affect a lot. Very much want your input on what you want us to look for as we start the process of interviewing. And I will also say that historically, Cornell has not done a search for the provost. We have a search firm that's in the search. Church has no preference one way or the other, internal or external. Everyone will be evaluated on the that question. So the statement is there for you to be able to hear what you want. Anything you want to
say? Sorry, a little bit more.
So I see the key priorities and challenges that you've outlined are academic excellence, innovation in teaching and learning, the tech campus, Cornell's business model, and synergies with Moral Cornell. How did you come up with those key challenges and priorities?
So this was sort of a community approach to the these are not, as I would say, these are not the only things that, people are going to focus on. But given when our set and its immersion, they're going to need a photo to spend a certain amount of time. And the reason we would make the call is not specifically, the photo actually does not have authority directly over the medical call. They have it also. And so, yes, this view is very important to Cornell, because when Cornell has drawn ties with the medical call, so this is not technically under their, supervision of the medical call. So, to actually put language.
Oh, these are very similar to what was in the presidential search, so they reflect a sort of broad discussion among the university, including the trustees, about Cornell's direction. The lead one under the provost, and people do get anxious when they see specific things called out. Cornell's existential precinct by the Ithaca, because it's a question of whether they'll be eating their lunch from phone lines. But the thing to note, and it's actually quiet, but the first one is academic excellence, which is really obviously what we're all here about. The mission of the university is based around teaching research and spreading knowledge in the world, and that falls under academic excellence. That is the job of the provost, the deans, and in some sense all of us. Those other ones are called out for specific reasons. Cornell Tech is an enormous, exciting book. From a panel that the university has to succeed, the relationship to the university is critical to the overall strength of the university. But that first one is really, I think, the umbrella for them.
I guess I had a question about the search committee composition, knowing that there's other shared governance representation with the student assembly and the graduate professional student assembly. Just wondering if there is any consideration based on the large impact that the provost position has on the operating model, the budget model, and ultimately really sort of the livelihood of many of the employees, if there was any consideration given to potentially having an EA seat similar to the EA and, or to the SA and the GPSA on the search committee.
That was not explicitly talked about.
Other questions? Got to have
them. So from the timing of things, are we to assume that both the current president and the incoming president will have some say in how things go?
So again, the president, so the president-elect is the chair of the committee. She is certainly going to be a member of the committee. So there will be a simultaneous transition. And not to mention the services at the same time.
So I just to sort of prime, this is a very, how come you're so nice to them? so I think this position, because of its role with the budget, has an enormous impact on all of us. And I think what Alan and his colleagues are here to hear from you is, what are you looking for in this person? What do you hope? What attributes? Setting aside the hard skills, what are the talents and attributes you hope to see in the next provost?
So I'll turn it to BJ for BJ's question, then I'll probably follow up.
So my question, I mean, we're looking at basically the two leads of the university incoming as potentially new people that are could be external from the organization itself. And so as Mary pointed out, what I feel like I'm looking for as well is someone that can help navigate if they're both external candidates, which, you know, that's great, change is good,
But for someone to be able to recognize that this is a 150-year-old institution, with some people that seem like they've been here for that amount of time as well. But that also means that there's a long legacy of tradition here, that people are used to one way of working. Not that that necessarily is the best way, but how can someone help shepherd what used to be into what will be? And so that's my question for you, is if you're looking at internal and external candidates for the top, or for the second of the top two positions here, one person already being an external candidate, how are you looking to balance those needs if it is another external person?
I have a few thoughts. I So what I love about being at this university, I'm in my eighth year, is it's very much what I call shared leadership model. So the president, current president, is very important. And the previous provost and the interim provost, you, the dean, we meet once a week, 2 hours every week, 2 days at 9 to 11. And we really act as a team. And so we have many deans are in the latter end of their term. So Catherine Borsley, Michael Johnson, myself, along with the it is a lot of shared experience that I think will be greatly important no matter who the provost is, the way things evolve, respect the traditions, and people are working. Mary's obviously a key role in the leadership and some of my colleagues, John, Mary's still sitting involved in Laura Brown's in the position so I think the senior leadership team has that experience, and it will frankly of course be more challenging if it's person's provost to learn tradition. And that's something the first committee is going to have to evaluate and look at all these trade-offs.
From a non-academic perspective, we find that we have to evaluate the academic quality of the university. The university has been in the budget model in the last couple of years, and everyone has experienced difficulty to budget balance and provost's role is critical, is the person who makes the delegation decision. And the new president-elect has made it clear that she supports the ultimate budget model that's been implemented, which is complete, but what I'm looking for in the individuals in particular is their ability to manage the administrative portion of their job. And when I think about that, I think there's nothing more important administratively than somebody who understands how to allocate funds. And so that'll be an area that I will personally be pursuing as we start talking to the candidates. Because I think that's the one that will impact my outcome for the relative needs of the
I think from a sort of statement, sort of what we're looking for, President-elect Garrett yesterday at a breakfast with some staff members said she really feels that we're all educators, right? We're all part of the educational process. We all play a role here, and I think that it's an important distinction and trying to break down some of the long-standing, the 150-year-old and longer traditions of the sort of the faculty, the staff, and the class system structure that we have in higher ed in general. And looking to a provost who doesn't have such a direct faculty mindset, but more of really a senior leader of the university and understanding that there's, you know, three times as many staff as there are faculty and there's real lives and there's jobs and there's work that's impacted by decisions that are made. And someone who's, I guess, sort of identifies more as a Cornellian and less of a faculty member, I think will be really important because just access to employees and the provost because it's often viewed as so academic or not within the reach of staff. I think that's something that's really important, and how to balance that in higher ed with all the history that comes with it. But I know that that's something that we've talked a lot about, and how we as the EA can assist in helping to bridge those gaps or break those barriers.
I would love, so if I had a paraphrase, deep respect for the role of staff building on the university.
Absolutely.
So can I just add one more thing? This is actually the chief operating officer. So the individual in this role actually carries responsibilities for everybody, whether they work on in the administrative units or colleges, whether they're staff, academic, non-professorial, or faculty. So what I would hope we would see is someone for whom the development of a shared community is the first priority in support of the student experience, because that's really why we're all here. And have respect for the fact that while the faculty are indeed the heart and soul of the place, this is very much a place that we all need each other. And we all play different roles, and some of those roles are a little closer to the student experience than others, but they're all critical roles. So it isn't really, my comment is it's not really just about staff, it's about the development of a true community where respect is the underlying issue.
Thank you. Curtis?
Hi. I just want to say, first, I'm really, really excited that diversity and inclusion is mentioned as a core competency. Can you, maybe you might know, or the search firm might know, what are some things that they're doing to target or advertise, other than a clinical higher education, to elicit a diverse applicant pool?
We've used a search firm in a number of searches, IP searches, the president search, at least one of the separate searches. They're very skilled in higher education, and they never rely on advertising alone. That's generally, it's generally not the main portal for candidates to come in. Instead, they both work with the unit, the faculty of the college, or the professors that work with the committee, to get their ideas and possible both nominations of actual candidates, but also people who may not be candidates but would know candidates. So they work internally to get access to that information. They also scan all of higher education. These two work in the higher education sector alone, so they essentially know most of the players at most of the universities where they would be looking for a provost. And so what they'll do is a scan of deans of major units, provosts elsewhere, vice provosts. They do a very broad scan, and one thing they're always looking for is to generate as much diversity as possible in the school. And when they don't succeed, they go back out and look harder. So it's a very active process. But that passive process won't yield the what they want. So you really have to do it. And then when they identify promising candidates, they have a very time-tested protocol for approaching them, cultivating them, exploring their interest in the job, encouraging people who may not have seen themselves as a provost, who we view as an attractive possibility. They're able to bring them along into the conversation, and often that's where you find very good deans and senior leaders, people who are very successful somewhere else, weren't thinking about leaving, but then are become attractive to process. It's a critical mission. They and the community supporting them is a very active approach.
Gina?
Speaking from shared governance, so the current administration, President Scorton, has been very, very supportive of and involved with shared governance. And to be honest, before we began this conversation about having you come to a meeting, I wasn't quite sure how the provost played in to the broad employee community. And now we understand with this information that you prepared, how very important and critical that is to supporting the budget and the operations and things. But we really never had a lot of access or input from the provost and shared governance. And so I would propose or ask your consideration to, as we did in the presidential search, to have a commitment to shared governance, that we also look to that from the provost. I think particularly as we've heard today, that this is the chief operating officer, and not just for budgetary reasons, but for that community as a whole that we're trying to engender, that's an important component. Thank you.
That's a very good point. The public does interact. One place of shared governance where the public interacts a lot.
Did you have a question? I could tell you were trying to pull your hand out from under that table.
I'm working on it. I guess the tagline would be that they fresh out of school, but I think in the time that I was here, was still I think the interactions we actually had still the provost.
I'm not sure I answered your question.
Are there any final questions or any final comments? We do have a few minutes. We have to vote on a charter change that we were at the beginning of our meeting a little short on quorum for, and we do have quorum, so before anybody leaves, we need to address our elections calendar for a brief moment. But I think on behalf of the EA, I'm sorry to rush through the process. I hate being the time steward, but really do appreciate you coming and seeking our input and all the work that you do on behalf of us and you know, advocating for a provost that's very community centric for the entire Quinnell community. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I've got to turn it over to BJ because I'm introducing the resolution. I know because I already introduced it, so
yeah.
There's 13 right now.
So, again, I know we closed discussion before. I don't know if there needs to be any other final thoughts on it, but it's just a call to questions for this.
I guess I'll call the question.
Thanks. So all those in favor of Employee Assembly Resolution Number 4, just signify by raising a placard.
Great.
And all those opposed? Abstentions? Great. Four passes. Stand back over to Greg.
Thanks. That's it. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
We adjourned by time.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.